I'm Brian Ellison from KCUR in Kansas City.
I'm John Dankosky from New England Public Radio. Welcome to America Amplified, Life, Community, and COVID-19. We're teaming up with public radio stations across the country to talk about how life has changed because of this pandemic.
COVID-19 has hit elderly Americans especially hard, and the numbers are frightening. In Connecticut and Colorado, in Maryland and Massachusetts, more than half of coronavirus deaths are in elder care facilities.
And this has caused enormous concern for nursing home workers who are caring for this vulnerable population under dangerous conditions, but also for families who are kept from visiting and caring for their loved ones. Millions of our seniors, of course, live independently too, but because they're at greater risk from COVID-19, some of that independence has been taken away, breaking important bonds with friends and family. So we want to know this hour, how are you coping? What has life been like for you and your family?
Coming up, we'll hear about how some seniors are dealing with isolation caused by the pandemic. But first, we want to talk about what's happening in America's nursing homes and what this crisis is telling us about how we care for elderly residents. In one Kansas City, Kansas nursing facility, John, about 15 miles from where I'm sitting right now, at least 30 residents died of COVID-19. And we're seeing stories like this around the country, Beaver County, Pennsylvania, and Belmont, Massachusetts, single facilities with dozens of deaths.
So here to help us understand what's happening inside nursing homes is Tamara Blue. She's a certified nursing assistant in Detroit, Michigan. Tamara, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Oh, glad to be here.
So what has your life been like since coronavirus hit?
Life has been horrible since coronavirus hit. The demand for need to taking care of seniors, we're short-staffed, sometimes overworked, a lot overwhelmed because this virus is so unknown.
We've been talking about these statistics of people dying in nursing facilities. Have you experienced some of that yourself?
Unfortunately, yes, I have. I've lost about 10 residents to the virus. Most of them died by themselves, either in the hospital or in the nursing home. This has been a heartbreaking thing because there's nothing that you can really do to help them. And with the virus not having proper PPO equipment to properly care for our seniors, most of them are dying by themselves, and you're not able to give them the love and the compassion that they really need in their last days. It's been a lot overwhelming for me because most of the time the seniors in nursing homes are like your family. They're like your grandmother, your aunt, your uncle. And to them, I'm a senior certified nurse's assistant. Most of them, I'm the only family or the only friends that they have. They're isolated to their room, and they've been isolated to their rooms for about 2 months now. So they're depressed, and then they're feeling lonely. There used to be a time where we can share our cell phones with them so they can reach out to the outside world and communicate with their families. But due to the coronavirus, we find that many seniors seen us or certified nurses assistants are afraid now to share their equipment so that the people can reach out to their families. Unfortunately, in the nursing home that I work at, the seniors don't have individual cell phones or phones in their room. So the families are most of part left out in the dark. They're unable to communicate. They're so short staffed that they don't have time for people to answer the phone. So you can just find out how your mom or how your dad is doing.
So there's all these problems of isolation, people living alone, dying alone, not able to see loved ones. You also mentioned personal protective equipment. Two questions for you, Tamara. In your facilities where you're working, is there testing for COVID-19? And do you have anywhere near the personal protective equipment that you need to do your job?
No, we don't have nowhere near the personal equipment that we need to do our jobs. Right now, we are giving raincoats, gloves, and we were given a mask at the beginning of this pandemic, but we don't have anything. We haven't been given anything else. Thank God our union has given us some equipment, but it's not nearly enough. You have to wear that equipment for the whole day to take care of. Sometimes you're stuck or you have at least 15 to 20 patients. So you're going from room to room with that same equipment because there's not enough for you to properly dispose of the equipment like you need to do for patient to patient care.
This is America Amplified. I'm with John Dankosky from New England Public Radio, and I'm Brian Ellison at KCUR in Kansas City, talking with Tamara Blue, a certified nursing assistant in Detroit, Michigan. And Tamara, I guess I'm curious about the personal toll this takes on you. I know that when one of us loses a family member, we get surrounded by community. There's support built in for us. You are losing a lot of people who you have gotten pretty close to.
It's like losing a family member. Every day, it's a new family member that you're using. And if we depend and lean on each other, as far as the staff members, but sometimes it's just overwhelming where you just need some time to really just grasp what's going on. It's hard. And then we see our people at their best, and unfortunately, we see them at their worst. It's hard to see somebody losing the fight to COVID-19, and there is nothing that you can do about it.
That's Tamara Blue from Detroit. Let's talk to some of our listeners. You're welcome to join this conversation. If you work in a nursing home, we especially would love to hear how the coronavirus has affected your day-to-day. You can also tweet at Amplified2020. Let's talk to Sarah in El Cerrito, California. Sarah, you're on America Amplified.
Thanks so much. I was just going to tell you about the story of my situation, which is that my mom's 96, and I'm in California, and she lives in Montana, which thankfully has not as many cases because they don't have as many people. But she lives alone in an apartment, and we were really working hard to get her into assisted living before all this came down, and now, of course, we're really glad that we don't have her in a group situation. But I did ask her to stop doing Meals on Wheels, which was not only food, but also social contact for her. So I now call her every day, and I am concerned. She has mobility issues, but she's sharp mentally. But, you know, we talk every day about what is she eating, because the social isolation, as well as just basic needs around food, are challenging. So, and it's also, of course, really nerve-wracking to not know how long this is going to last. But she's doing okay. And so that is the story of how it's impacting me.
Well, I really appreciate
it. Of course, I'm a senior also, and I can't go visit her, of course.
Yeah. So. And if your mom is 96, you really value that time, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
So. Sarah, I really appreciate your sharing that story with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And John, I think Sarah speaks for a lot of people, sort of naming that tension between wanting the companionship, wanting the care, but also just being very afraid.
Yeah, I think a lot of people in this conversation are afraid. And we're going to get to some stories where hopefully people are overcoming some of these fears and finding ways to cope with this. But there's an awful lot of fear out there as well amongst the elderly population and people who take care of them. Let's go to Blue. Blue is calling from Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Hi there, Blue. You're on America Amplified.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my call. So I'm just an individual, young individual in my community, unemployed during this time, not in school, looking to get involved, and found So Face Mask Philadelphia, and it's been really great. We've been able to deliver to hospitals and elderly care facilities, and I pick up homemade face masks from seniors in their homes, quarantined, almost every day when I go out and drive and deliver. So being able to get involved in that way has been great. And then also through this organization, been able to get the elderly people in my family the protection that they need when it's so scarce right now. It's panic shopping. So I think knowing that there's local movements happening to help people get what they need, especially marginalized, but the groups most heavily affected by this right now, including the elderly, has been really great peace of mind.
Well, Blue, thank you. And thank you so much for your phone call. I really appreciate that. Tamara, as you listen to this, there are so many people who are pulling together, working with seniors, trying to get the right kind of equipment into places like yours. I guess I'm just wondering how you view that as someone who goes into nursing facilities every day, having to rely on your friends and neighbors to get the equipment sometimes that you and the people that you care for need.
It's hard because the demand is so great that they were not properly prepared ahead of time. No one thought a year ago that we will be living in this day where we need so much protection gear. Most of the time in the nursing homes, you may have one person or two people that are on isolation, but no one ever would have thought that we would be living in a day where we need isolation for everybody in the building. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that, but most of the time when people give help, it's not into the nursing homes, it's to the hospitals. The nursing homes are most of the time overlooked.
Let's talk to Lee in Agawam, Massachusetts. I may be saying that wrong. Lee, thanks.
Agawam, you got it right.
Thanks for calling. Lee?
Yes, hi.
Go ahead.
It's Leah.
Leah, I'm sorry.
Hi. That's all right. You're not the first. I'm a nurse specialized in geriatrics here in Agawam. And my father is an 88-year-old widower across the border in Connecticut. And at the moment, we're just getting over losing my husband in February. We haven't been able to grieve together. My father wasn't able to say goodbye to my husband before he died. And right now, my father is in isolation and quarantine because he was exposed to COVID. So the family's doing the best they can with phone calls and delivering him groceries. But being a nurse, I just know how depression and loneliness and isolation are such huge risks to an elder person.
And Leah, I thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us and sharing that story, because John, I think that's a story we're hearing a lot.
It is a story that we're hearing a lot, and we're talking throughout this hour about how coronavirus is affecting elderly Americans. We've been talking about life in nursing homes, but we do want to hear from independent seniors, from caregivers and family members just like Leah. How are you coping? You can join this conversation. It's 800-444-8652, or you can tweet us at Amplified2020.
Again, it's 800-444-8652. Or tweet at Amplified2020. We'll be right back with more of our conversation about being elderly in the age of coronavirus in America. This is America Amplified. I'm Brian Ellison from KCUR in Kansas City.
And I'm John Dankosky from New England Public Radio, and this is America Amplified, Life, Community, and COVID-19. We're talking this hour about how this pandemic is affecting elderly Americans and what it's teaching us about how we approach aging here in America. Wherever you are, we want to hear from you. Tweet at us at Amplified2020.
But first, we've been asking seniors to call us over the past few weeks and leave us a voicemail about what this time has been like. Some are caring for older loved ones through the pandemic. Some are struggling with loneliness. Here are some of those stories.
Hi, my name is Kathleen Bluett. I am 66 years old. I live in Newtown, Connecticut. A lot of seniors, like myself, play senior sports. We play women's softball in tournaments across the country. And of course, with COVID-19, we're not able to do any of this. So we've had to come up with other ways to stay healthy so that we are ready to play again once this is lifted. You have to realize that it's not just sports for us. It's camaraderie. It's time together. Anyway, thanks for asking for our stories.
Hi, it's Marianne O'Hare. My aunt is in assisted living in Mystic, Connecticut. The other day, she was having breakfast in her room by herself, and out her window, there were three men in hazmat suits looking in at her. She went into an instant state of panic. She thought that World War III had started and we couldn't be there to help.
My name is Liz. I'm calling from southeastern Connecticut. My mother is a stroke victim. She has vascular dementia, and up until the doors were shuttered, she had private CNAs who attended to her needs. For the first time in 4 years, my mother is on her own. I'm so sadly concerned about what lies ahead and the damage that has been done so far.
Hello, my name is Maureen Connors Flood. I live in Pinellas Park, Florida. I lost my husband of 42 years, May 26 last year. I have a wonderful, supportive family, but it's not the same as having the man who loved you unconditionally, who at this time would have been right at my side as he was through hurricanes and other challenges in our lives I joined the grief we're all feeling around the world for this terrible pandemic. I know I sound weepy, but I really have joy from the people who support me and love me, and that's what's keeping me going.
That audio diary came to us from the producer of today's program, Andrea Tuthope, from the America Amplified team at KCUR in Kansas City. Brian, we've been getting messages all throughout this week. When we asked for them, I heard from a woman named Bonnie who wrote that her husband has Parkinson's and dementia. She's become his sole caregiver at home during this crisis, and she tells us that she's lucky she has her husband and that she's not alone, but she and others in her situation feel exhausted by this 24-hour caregiving role that they have right now, nobody else really to help them.
Right, and I think a lot of people are feeling exhaustion, fatigue. It's emotional as well as physical. I want to bring in our next guest, Beverly Murray. She's 91, and she lives alone in an apartment in Excelsior Springs, Missouri. Beverly, welcome to our program.
I'm here.
Oh, good. We're glad that you're there. And Beverly, how are you doing through all of this?
I'm doing good. I've been with my daughter for 40 days, and I have now returned back home to my own apartment, and I'm doing good.
Well, that's great, Beverly. your daughter asked you to move in with her 40 days ago. How come? How did you feel about that when your family asked you to do that?
Well, when they was going to quarantine everything and everyone, they didn't think I needed to be home alone during that time. And she was the most convenient one to take me in her home. And after consulting all of the children, they made the decision that I should take up her offer and go. And I was reluctant to do that, but I'm glad I did.
Yeah. You're glad you went through it, but you're back at home now, right? So how does that feel?
I'm back at home now, and I've been there two nights by myself, and I'm doing well. And I'm able to manage to fix my meals. It may not be the best meal on earth, but I don't go hungry.
Yeah, I have to think, Beverly, you've graciously shared your age with us at you're 91 years old. You have lived through a lot. I have to ask, have you ever seen anything like this? How is this situation different than anything you've seen before?
I have never, ever seen anything like this. I've seen times when we have to be careful what we do, where we go, and I've seen shortages of things that have rationed you out, like sugar, mm-hmm. coffee, a lot of things like that. But never have I ever seen anything happen like this pandemic has been. And I think about it, and I think, how long has it really been here that we did not know about? Because I can't believe, and it's hard for me to understand, that it was just like overnight. It's all over the world.
Yeah. You know, we've heard from a few people who've lost their spouses, and I know your husband died a few years ago. Has this time been more difficult living alone, having lost your spouse?
I miss him, yes. Miss him every day. But I've adjusted to myself that this is the way it is, and I have to make the best of it. And why burden my family every day moaning and groaning about something? I try to keep my mouth shut and behave myself.
So, Beverly, I have to just share with you, if I can, your experience is making me think a lot about my grandmother. She died in March at the age of 111. So you're just a spring chicken. But she had moved to a nursing home by then, but she was almost 100.
I guess, I guess I am.
Well, you know, she lived in her own house, though, till she was 105, which was as long as she was able. What do people not understand about why that kind of independence is so important to you, even as you get older?
I don't know. I have a granddaughter that says, Grandma's a tough old bird. She's going to live to be 100.
Well, we might have said that about my grandmother on occasion, too.
No, I don't.
It's such an amazing story, Brian.
I don't want to.
Yeah. Well, I just want to break in real quick and let you know that you're listening to America Amplified. We're talking with Beverly Murray. She's 91 years old. She's from Excelsior Springs, Missouri. I'm John Dankosky in Connecticut today with New England Public Radio. Brian Ellison is in Kansas City. Let's go back to the phones because we're getting lots of phone calls. Deborah is calling from Atlanta. Hi there. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to share that I have been a visitor. I'm 86, but I'm not in a nursing home, thank God. But I have been a visitor to a nursing home. I'm in Atlanta here now. And I see at this particular place, the staffing is not enough people to take care of the patients that are there. A lot of patients, a few people. I visited this nursing home at different times, and sometimes I go in at 3 or 4 o'clock. The person I was visiting hadn't had morning care. And with sanitation being so important, I just feel that this is why so many have passed in nursing homes, because they're not able to clean properly.
And just not enough people in the nursing home itself. And Deborah, thank you so much for bringing that to our attention. Really quickly, I want to turn back to Tamara Blue, who's been with us. She's a CNA in Detroit. Tamara, you just heard that call. And that's something else that you've been coping with, just not enough people doing the work at the nursing home you work at.
I agree. Most of the time, we have one to a floor, and each floor has at least 20 people on the floor. There's nearly not enough time to give anybody proper care. It's just not enough staff. And people are afraid now to risk their lives, and the pay is not what it should be for the work that we do. And unfortunately, we do have to look at pay. We look at the love that we have for our patients, but pay is what keeps us going, what helps us pay our rent and stuff. And you find out a lot of people are not really willing to risk their lives for the pay that they're getting.
Mm. I want to turn to somebody else who's been looking at this this situation for quite some time from a number of different angles. Patricia McCreary is the owner of Margaret's Place, a senior recreational center based in Kansas City. And Patricia, welcome to our show. First of all, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You've been hearing our recent conversation here about staffing levels at nursing homes. Before we talk about your business, maybe you can talk about some of your experiences with nursing homes. Is some of what you're hearing today resonating with you?
Yeah, my heart is breaking over here. I've even had to grab my box of tissue with some of the callers. But I think the problem is huge. It's a problem here in America, and I think across the world, people just didn't plan for the baby boomers. I know here in America, it's just not nursing homes. It's assisted living facilities. It's facilities that that house seniors and disabled people. There's the regulations from the state at a state level are just they're too loose, and I think that's a lot of the problem. If we could sanitize these facilities and have tighter regulations without a pandemic, I think we would have been able to safely get through a pandemic like this without so many casualties.
So tell us about your facility, Margaret's Place. What exactly is it? I've heard it referred to as an adult daycare.
Correct. So we are state classified adult daycare. Margaret was my grandmother. I was her caregiver for 6 years. She suffered from dementia and Alzheimer's. And I did a lot of research because I had no idea in my early 20s what to do with a little old lady with you know, such tough diseases like dementia and Alzheimer's, if you've ever dealt with it. And all the research pointed to an adult daycare, a place where she could socialize, you know, get back to living life and hopefully, you know, regain a purpose, you know, get good meals and just have that support that it's hard to get when you're just living at home with a loved one. We toured all of Jackson County for adult daycares, and her exact words were, "I would rather sit at home and rot than go to any of the facilities. They were nasty. They smelled bad. The food was disgusting. And people were just not engaged in the facility." So we opened Margaret's Place in her honor. So we have created a beautiful space that's sanitized and clean. We've actually created policies that we're going to try to advocate at a state level so that we can make a change in these facilities. So when we do have, and if we have another pandemic like this, maybe these facilities will be better staffed and pay their staff better, so the staff actually cares about the jobs they're doing. And, you know, the ratios are not 1 in 10. Our internal ratios in Margaret's Place, when I say that, I mean there's one staff member to every 5 participants instead of 1 in 10. Or like the other the guest was saying, she's got one person on a floor of 20. That's ridiculous.
And now, are you open through all of this? Has your facility been open?
You know, we are not open, but it's a funny question because on March 11th, on the 10th, when we first heard about all of this, I reached out to the CDC and our local health department, and they gave me no directions. We are considered an essential business, so we could have chose to stay open, but because we have that high-risk population, fortunately, we're Monday through Friday, 8 to 6, like you would take your children to daycare while you're at work. So I did choose to close our doors just to keep our participants safe.
But we're talking about the way elderly people are experiencing this virus, both in nursing homes and living independently. Judith in Wilmington, Delaware, you're on America Amplified.
Hi. I'm just calling to say that my mother, who didn't meet your relative's ripe old age of 111, though she might have if it hadn't been for this. She was about to turn 106 in June. And these last 6.5 weeks, I think, were just a kind of torture for her. She's been in an assisted living facility since she was 96 and had done well there. You know, she has dementia, but she knew all of us. Her short-term memory is really poor.
Yeah.
But she was extremely sociable, and they had to cut out all the group activities, which she was always very involved with. She was basically had to stay in her room. Everybody she saw for these 6.5 weeks had masks on their faces. She had a hearing problem, and so not being able to see people's lips was a problem. She suffered a mild stroke about, 2 weeks ago tomorrow would be. So she had to go into the hospital for a couple of days. They brought her back, had to quarantine her in the health center at this continuing care community. She did not have COVID, although I consider her sort of a casualty of this whole epidemic. And she seemed to be doing okay on Monday. In the meantime, my sister, who actually lives in the same community, she's 76, and she was a very frequent visitor. With my mother, she was not able to visit her at all since March 10th.
Wow.
And even though we tried to connect with her through Skype and phone calls, it was just really tough for my mother, I think. And so, in any case, my sister wasn't allowed to accompany her to the hospital.
Yeah. That must have been incredibly hard, Judith. I can only imagine.
It was terrible, and I have to say, I mean, I miss her terribly. We were very, very close. But the idea, and I don't see any of this really changing in the near future,
okay.
The idea of her going back into this kind of place where everybody looks like a Martian and she can't have any family.
Right.
My sister was finally called on Tuesday morning, but they couldn't wake her up. And so my sister sat by her bed in vigil, basically, for the 3 days. She never did regain consciousness.
Judith, I am so sorry for your loss and grateful for your sharing that story with us. And, you know, I want to ask Tamara Blue, you heard that guest say that she considers her mother a casualty even though she didn't die from COVID. Does that make sense to you? Does that resonate with you?
Yes, it does. She could have died from loneliness, depression. Not being able to be around your family and you're around your family on the norm, that's heartbreaking for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Never alone someone who's suffering dementia. It takes them out of their norm. It's heartbreaking, yes.
You also heard from her there that she's not sure how this changes. I mean, as we prepare to say goodbye to you in this show tomorrow, what's the way forward? Are there changes that can be made, or is there nothing to be done?
For a while, I think we're living in the new norm. I don't see a lot of changes coming in the near future. We're just taking it one day at a time. And it's sad because I just want to say quickly, and I pray for all the people that I've heard on the radio this afternoon, but it's sad because the families are not allowed to be with their loved ones in their time of need, but this is the new norm. Until they can get control over the virus, this is the way that we have to live now.
Tamara Blue in Detroit, Michigan, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you so much for your service, all of the work that you're doing. Best of luck, okay?
Thank you.
And thanks also to Beverly Murray, who joined us to tell us her story from Missouri. 91-year-old Beverly, still a bit younger than your grandma was, Brian.
A little bit.
We've been talking about the impact of COVID-19 on elderly Americans. We also want to ask how we treat seniors as a society, even in healthier times. What is this showing us, and how we might change all that now? Join this discussion. Tweet us at Amplified2020.
Help us think through. What does the world look like if it improves for elderly Americans? How can changes eventually happen? We'll be right back. This is America Amplified. I'm Brian Ellison from KCUR in Kansas City.
And I'm John Dankosky from New England Public Radio. This is America Amplified, life, community, and COVID-19. We're talking this hour about how this pandemic is affecting elderly Americans and what it's teaching us about how we approach aging here in America.
We're talking with Patricia McCreary. She's the owner of Margaret's Place, a senior recreational center in Kansas City. And Patricia, I guess I'd love to hear about one of the seniors who comes to your center, or did come to your center before you had to close it to help prevent the spread of COVID-19?
So, you know, since we've closed, we currently still take care of our participants at home. We bring them hot meals 5 days a week. We bring them groceries, and when they call and need necessities like toilet paper or mask or disinfectants, we still take them to them. So my seniors are, of course, missing the Soul Train lines and the arts and crafts and the movie theater and all the life, our garden club and all those fun things that we do. They're missing that, but just constantly communicating with them. We've got people that call in and check on them. So they're still smiling when we see them, you know, Monday through Friday with their mask on, and we're taking pictures, you know, in our social distancing. So I think our seniors are getting along well, and opening that hotline for the community has allowed us to be able to reach out and touch other seniors and disabled people in our community.
I feel like I'm missing out by not being at Margaret's Place. We should mention that we had one of our listeners on Twitter, Eliza, who says, "Mom's in a retirement home far away, quarantined at 96 with Parkinson's. It's very hard. I want to share something that has helped. I've been reading aloud over the phone, and it's been a source of joy. Perhaps others can do so, too."
Mm. Yeah. There's so many things that if we think outside the box, we can still help. People are petrified to be around the senior demographic just because they're thinking, oh, I don't want to get the COVID-19. But these are still human beings. I mean, they're the reason we're here. So we just have to get creative. And I've seen even at some of the nursing homes where they're playing checkers, you know, outside the window with their loved ones and things like that. Hmm. So there's still ways that we can help this community. We've just got to rally together and do it.
I want to get a call here from Kate, who is in Kensington, Maryland. Hi there, Kate. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a little bit different story. I'm 72. I've been at home here alone for about 6 weeks. I'm still working at my, although virtually, of course, at my preschool, where I've worked for over 20 years, probably more like 22 or 23. And so I'm involved in Zoom meetings, sometimes several a day. And what I've discovered is how much I enjoy really being alone. I've been an introvert for a long time, of course, but I'm enjoying watching the trees outside the window. I'm enjoying doing my little bit of gardening and petting my cat. And I just learned how to order groceries online and I'm able to go pick them up, and I really don't want to go out there. I am, I suppose you could say, scared. This disease sounds like a terrible way to die. Well, I'd rather stay inside.
Well, Kate, I have to ask you, though, and this is a perspective that we haven't heard much of this hour yet. So you're in your 70s, you're more at risk for COVID, but you're also working like millions and millions of other seniors right now. You are still in the workforce. And so this is changing up your life substantially.
Yes. And thank goodness, however, that I'm so involved in my school. Of course, the school is closed, so we have so much to work out in terms of how can we open, what are going to be the conditions when we open, and being in touch with our families, and so it keeps me quite connected.
I'm glad that you're connected, Kate, and thank you so much for your phone call. Brian, I just wanted to quickly say we've gotten a lot of messages throughout the course of this week. You talked about your grandma. I got a message from my Aunt Jean. She's also in her 70s, and she lives independently in a continuing care community. Yeah. She says they're getting out and getting exercise, but she misses playing bridge with others at a table and not at a computer.
Right.
And I think that for a lot of people we've heard from, keeping up virtual relationships is hard. At least our last caller is able to go to Zoom meetings with some of the people she teaches with, so she has some of that connection. But a lot of seniors are stuck at home. They're not able to make those same sort of connections.
That's right. And if they try to make them face-to-face or personally, or even if they try that in the coming days as the stay-at-home orders get lifted, that comes with its own set of challenges. Let's talk to Carolyn in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. Carolyn, this is America Amplified.
Hi.
So tell us about your situation.
Well, I'm 64 years old. I live in a senior living, a planned senior living area. There's about 20 dwellings very close to each other, but yet you can easily, you know, when you're on your porch, you're easily 20, 30 feet away from other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm social distancing. I have been from the get-go. Nobody here is social distancing.
Huh.
From the time it was recommended, nobody is social distancing.
And what do you think that's about? Have you asked anyone why they're not?
They're watching Fox News. I mean, who knows? I mean, I listen to you guys. I find out what's going on.
So you think they're misinformed? Is that you're saying it's not a matter of the inconvenience of it? You think they just don't believe it's necessary?
Oh, they don't know. They don't know what's going on. I mean, they really don't know how horrible this disease is. Because I find out, and I even have a farmer, because this is beautiful. This is very rural here where I live. This little town has only got 2,000 people, and there's some farms around here. And I'm friends with a local farmer. She brings me grass-fed beef, non-GMO and organic produce and eggs. She brings it to my door. I have a check for her clipped up on the side of my door on this little clip that hangs there. And I am social distancing. And I will go out once in a while and talk to my neighbors because it's beautiful here. I can take walks around here, too, because it is rural.
Well, I appreciate that, Carolyn. Thanks so much for calling. John, some people are living in fear in this season. Some older adults, not so much, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. And that's why it's great that we're getting calls from all over the country, people in very different situations. Let's go to Patience, who's calling from Sacramento, California. Patience, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you.
What's on your mind?
Yeah, I was just calling to comment on the staffing because I do work in an elderly care facility, assistant service director. I just want to say right now, the amount of stress that everyone is facing is so overwhelming. Not to mention that we were already short of staff. Then when the COVID-19 hit, a lot of staff members don't want to come to work because a lot of these places don't get paid that much, maybe $12 an hour, and you have 20 to 15 patients at least, the most. And some of these staff are like, I don't want to come in to just to make $12 an hour. Then the risk of me getting my family sick are so high, I'd rather just stay home. Now, when you have a floor of 100 and something patients and you only have 4 staff, you have no choice. Everyone is on the floor trying to help out. at the end of the day, you just go burn out. Then you have people who are working like 16 hours around the clock because staff are not showing up because the pay is so low. And there's not many that advocate for this care, this CNA in the nursing home. The advocate is so low. You don't see, hardly you see CNA in the capital protesting for a better pay. You don't see that often. So they don't get acknowledged at all. Majority of the time, this staff do not get acknowledged. And well, the regulation is so high, it's just unbearable for some of the staff.
And patients, thank you very much for your phone call. And we're trying as best as we can to acknowledge some of this work. And Patricia McCreary in Kansas City, I know that you're listening in and you're hearing some of these things, the hard work that goes into nursing homes, facilities like yours, the Senior Recreational Center, and the stress that people must be under right now.
Yeah, you know, she hit the nail on the head. It just goes back to a lot of these owners of these facilities. There's a lot of money to be made in this industry. And that's why a lot of these people that open these nursing homes and assisted living facilities and, you know, different facilities, they get into the business because it's a big business. And their profit margins are too high and they're not paying their staff enough. I mean, that's a problem. And that goes back before the COVID-19 hit. You know, the life expectancy in a nursing home is 3 months. It's that way because the staff most of the time are underpaid and they have their own stress that they're dealing with at home. And they come to work upset and depressed and dealing with that as opposed to coming to an environment where they're paid well so they don't have those stresses at home. And I mean, it's a problem. It's the state needs to regulate these facilities better, and it's time more people advocate for it.
Well, let's talk to someone who has also spent some time in nursing homes, although in a somewhat different way. Susanna is joining us from Peachtree, Georgia. Susanna, you're on America Amplified.
Thank you so much. Yes, you know, I've had a joy of taking communion to people in nursing homes, two different facilities here in Peachtree City over the last 18 years. And one of the things that I have noticed, last year we lost 7 of the people of the 35 that I took communion to. We lost 7 of them to flu death. Mm. This is last year. And both of the different facilities adjusted the way that they were caring for their people. They had people quarantined that had a fever. And I just noticed they made a lot of good changes. And it has paid off this year. The last time I was able to take communion was March 10th. But I pray for not only the people I go to visit, but their CNAs, like Patricia. And I told them before I left, God is using your hands to take care of all these people. And I told them I'd be praying for them and their families during this time. And the good news that I have to share is all of the people that I would go to visit are still doing well, and it's been 52 days and counting. Wow. So, yes, go ahead.
I was just going to say that is a blessing, Susanna, and I'm so glad that you were able to share that with us. And I know that Tamara, the CNA who was with us a little earlier on our show today, is appreciative of your prayers.
I want to get to another phone call here. This is Stephen, and Stephen's in Athens, Ohio. Hi, Stephen. Go ahead. You're on America Amplified.
Hello. I feel sorry for the woman in Montana who had to quit her Meals on Wheels because here in Athens, they actually have changed it to where it's only once a week. But if there's, like, special deliveries, they'll deliver it on, like, Friday. But they all wear protective gear, and they drop it off. And then they make certain you're home, and then they leave. And they still get to have at least connection with someone once a week, checking on them.
So it seems like that program's really working well still, Stephen, even with all the restrictions.
Yes. They said because of the CDC, they were cutting back to once a week, but sometimes there's other deliveries they have to make, and so they make it on, like, another day.
Well, thank you so much for that. And, you know, we got another comment here from Twitter Kim Taylor in Texas says, I've not had a daily worker since mid-March to help with the house. Meals on Wheels delivers once a week. I have the Thursday delivery driver call every few days. My church streams Sunday school and the sermon. I just have to say, Brian, my grandmother worked on Meals on Wheels until she was the age where she should have been collecting Meals on Wheels. She was still, you know, down there in the church basement,
right,
preparing meals for little old ladies that needed a little bit more help than she did.
Yep, I know a number of Meals on Wheels deliverers like that, and which speaks to something that that you said earlier, Patricia, that it is about the camaraderie. It is about being with people. And, you know, as we look to the future and as we think about how being elderly in America might look different after this, Patricia, can you see ways that the work you do at Margaret's Place, or that other adult daycare centers do and other assisted living facilities do, might be different going forward?
It should be different going forward. I know our facility, not to boast, but I planned everything from start to finish around what I could not find from my grandmother. And I believe after 5 years, because we're still a new facility, we're only 5 years old, but I believe after 5 years, we have created policies, procedures, and regulations that we are ready to take to the states, and hopefully they will adopt them. You know, it's just about regulating these facilities and better pay for the people that work in these facilities. I really think that this is not something that has to be very difficult. The baby boomers are all of the older people now in the government. They've been the ones passing the laws and creating the policies, and they just didn't plan for themselves. So I think if we just can, you know, sit at a table and you know, push better policies and regulations for these facilities, I think that this wouldn't be so difficult. I mean, your geriatric industry and the disabled community, these are people that are already high risk because their immune systems are so low. If we feed them better food, then I know Meals on Wheels is a great program, but there's a lot of processed food that they feed. If we put good things into our body, then we don't need all the medications and our body can naturally heal itself. And you know, that's just boils down to those regulations and how we you know, need to improve our facilities for our senior and disabled communities.
Let's take a call from Alexandria, Virginia. Aziz, welcome to America Amplified.
Welcome, thanks. Yeah, I want to talk about my mom, who is 88 years old. I have been taking care of her with my sister since October. She became demented, and she has other disease like Addison disease, thyroid disease. And we have been through a lot with her, but at certain point we wanted to get her a care at home through the city. And then came March and the news of COVID. And thanks God, I avoided. And also I didn't want my mom to have every day different person to come take care of her. I want to say something. COVID-19 is now bringing up what bad society we're in. This society isolates the old people. Old people we are ashamed of. They don't come to our party to meet our grandchildren. That's what is sad about those people. They worked all their life. They contributed to the society. And then they've put, say, in jail, self-isolation. And they sleep with their shoes on. Those home care facilities, they have bad, I mean, substandard, and the quality of their care is very bad. It really pains me to see those old people.
Well, Aziz,
I
think a lot of folks have felt that way. Maybe they felt it a little bit for a long time, but John, I think a lot of people would say it's really come to light right now, as Aziz said.
Yeah, and Patricia, maybe we'll give you the last word on this. This is something that we wanted to talk about, what this can teach us about how we care for our seniors and think about seniors in America right now. We just have a couple of seconds.
Well, I think that from the business owner standpoint, you need to give more love into your facility. So I think if we can rally together as family members and demand that these owners of these facilities do a better job and regulate their facilities better, I think that will be the first step in making a huge impact in changing the way our senior and disabled community is cared for.
And do you think that we can do a better job just honoring senior Americans, though, in life in general?
Absolutely. That's what it is. It's creating spaces where that they can find a new purpose and live a happy life in the at their end days. A lot of participants at our facility now have started their own businesses or are out of wheelchairs when the doctor said they never will be out of wheelchairs. And it just is all the love that you give them. If we can just give them love and take a stand, I think we can absolutely change this industry.
That's Patricia McCreary, the owner of Margaret's Place, a senior recreational center in Kansas City. Patricia, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
And that's all the time we have for our program. Thanks for joining us for America Amplified Life, Community, and COVID-19. You can listen back to this episode at americaamplified.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Next week on the show, the pandemic's effect on mental health with hosts from Iowa Public Radio and Boise Public Radio. Special thanks to WABE in Atlanta, KCUR in Kansas City, and New England Public Radio for working together for today's show. Thanks also to the team at America Amplified, a community engagement initiative supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Our phone screener today is Danny Alexander. Our lead producer and director is Andrea Tudhoe. Thanks also to John Vosten. Our engineer is Chris Pruitt, with help from Bart Rankin and Chuck Dubay. Our digital and social media editor is Kathy Liu. Our technical director is Steven Steigman. And our executive producer is John Haas.
From KCUR, I'm Brian Ellison.
And I'm John Dankosky at New England Public Radio. This is America Amplified.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.